Wednesday, April 11, 2018. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Supposed to be a Tuesday podcast. I think if I'm a day late one more week, I'm just going to have to make this a Wednesday podcast. But there are reasons why this one is late. Last week, I was just tired and lazy. This week, actual reasons. I'll get to those in a second. I want to give my response to a few things that came out last week, both in the Twitterverse and in the podcasting community. First, some of you may remember my conversation with Mark Meltzer. We were talking about craps, and I mentioned that as much as I enjoy placing 6 and 8, that I often sort of battle myself into whether or not I should do that or just do a combat with odds and get the 6 and 8 that way. The Travel Zork Twitter handle chimed in and commented that he will place the 6 and 8 when he first gets to a table to set his average higher than you would if you were just did a line bet with odds, because your odds won't be counted towards your rating. Placing a 6 and 8 gives you a solid foundation on where your average rating is going to start at, and you can manage it from there. So great insights. I hadn't really thought of it that way, and that will now change the way that I approach a craps table. Many of us are familiar with the incident that happened at the Paris Hotel involving the guys from the Vegas Confessions podcast. They've talked about it on their show. Chris from Faces and Aces sort of dedicated a show to this incident and customer service around it, and sort of proposed the question throughout, would this incident cause you to end your patronage to either the hotel or to the company altogether? And I work for a large organization that has a lot of locations locally around the United States, and I know that some are great and some are not great, but I know overall as an organization, we're here to deliver for our customer base. And so I am in the court of not giving my business to Paris because of what happened, but I will continue my business with Caesars Entertainment and with the Total Rewards family, because I've been to several casinos there and hotels, and you know, the last time I was in Vegas, I spent most of my time at Caesars Entertainment properties and was treated well, and I have good experiences there. What happened with Julian and at the Paris Hotel is enough for me, even just as a observer or someone who heard about that story, that's enough for me to not want to go there. But now that now that I'm getting to know these people, it's even more reason to no longer give them my business, and I'll avoid it. Not necessarily even going to boycott it, just avoid giving my money there. Cousin Vito's Casino Podcast, the last episode, him and his guest Bethany were talking about casino life and sort of having casinos be a part of sort of your professional life, and they joked about how gambling expenses can't be used as business expenses. I was wondering if anybody out there has information on this, or if they're spun up on this, or can at least point me in the right direction. The two things I am curious about, though, are tips at a casino, tips at a table, and then buy-ins for tournaments inside the casino. So I know that when you're on business travel, tips, I believe, can be used as business expenses, right? So I'm imagining tips around the casino is pretty objective, but if I tip a dealer at a craps table and I'm at the craps table for business reasons, that is to get insight, for, you know, researching a book or creating content or something like that, something that will be used for my business. If I tip a dealer, is that tip business expense? And then the buy-in I'm curious about, because I know that a lot of states view tournaments different than actual gambling, like a tournament's different than a cash game when it comes to poker, right? A lot of places that didn't have casinos, a lot of states that didn't have casinos still could have poker tournaments, right? Because it's a buy into a tournament with a cash prize, not actually gambling or something like that. Curious if tournament buy-ins could be considered business expenses if they were actually business related. If you have insight on that, hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life. So reason number one that the podcast didn't come out yesterday morning like I was hoping was because yesterday morning, as I was getting ready to put out the podcast, I realized that, oh, there is a blackjack tournament at MGM National Harbor. I'm going to go play that, and then I'm going to include what happened in the episode. So there was round one where three players from the table advanced. Round two, which were the semifinals, where one player advanced and then the final table. The first table, notable hands from the first table. I was seat five, having a hard time. I was seat three, having a hard time getting, really winning hands or being able to get extra money on a table. And by extra money, I mean like doubles and splits, where you can get more money on a table in any given hand. So, I'm sort of mid-range on chip stack. I get a 7 versus a dealer 5. I double that, hoping that the 5 will bust. I lose. A couple hands later, I get a 20 versus the dealer 9. Late middle hand, right? So there's 12 hands to a round. This is probably closer to maybe 8 or 9 in 8th or 9th hand. I get the 20. I'm really consider splitting it to get more money on the table, but it's against a 9. I don't love that, so I decide to stay, and the dealer drew to 21. I thought I was done after that. I didn't think it was such a close game that I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to eke into the top 3, and that's how close it was. So going into the last game, or last hand, I'd won a few hands and was sort of really close to the other two or three players that were around my chip stack. So of the six of us, one dropped out, and then one was a clear chip leader, and then so there was four of us that were fighting for spots 2 and 3 on the chip leader. So two players that were close to me in chips had to bet before me, right? And they made some pretty conservative bets. I went all in, and then the fourth player that was fighting for us, he made a really good bet that was sort of right in between. So even with one or two of us lose a hand, I think he was going to be in a good spot. I get dealt a 20. Seat 5 and 6, which are closest to me in chips, they get dealt soft hands. Dealer shows a 5. I stay. They both double and get 19s on their soft hands. The dealer draws to 19, so they end up pushing. I win my hand, and I have just enough chips to advance to the next round. Unfortunately, the next round did not go the way that I wanted to. I'm having a real tough time getting past the second round in blackjack tournaments. Now, of course, big difference is instead of three people advancing, it's one. But I am unlucky on hands that, I play a little bit conservative in the first like 25 to 33% of hands. And I always end up getting decent hands then. And then there always seems to be a player that's aggressive, and they get lucky on their aggressive play. They become huge chip leaders early on. And so then I have to play a little looser, a little more aggressively to get chips on the table and sort of try to play catch up. Because if you don't stay sort of within striking distance, you can play safe and then find out that mathematically you're just not even going to get there at the end. So the big lesson from the tournament was one motion betting. So the last hand of the second round, I was way back. There was three of us left at the table. I was way back in third. The other two guys were very close together in chip stack. Guy to my left has to bet first. He puts a bunch of chips in his betting circle and then goes back to get more chips. You can't do that. It's one betting motion in a blackjack tournament. So once you put chips in the betting circle, that's it. You can't go back to get more. I was upset at that because I needed him to bet aggressively to obligate the other guy to possibly bet aggressively. and hopefully get us in a scenario where they both lose and I win and I somehow leapfrog both of them. I don't know. I couldn't do the math quick enough to find out if that was going to work, but that was really the only hope that I had. None of it mattered anyways because the dealer had a blackjack on the last stand. So table lost, and the guy to my right advanced. But there's a baccarat table or baccarat tournament at the end of the month that I'm hoping to get in on and see if baccarat treats me any better than blackjack has in recent history. Today's interview is with Julian Romero. Julian Romero from the Vegas Confessions podcast. Him and I had a great time chatting with each other. He's going to tell us about getting into gambling, how he's introduced to it, what he enjoys about the casino, stuff like that. But I think that the two things that I really enjoyed about my interview with Julian was he talks to us about how the Vegas Confessions podcast sort of came to be. That's a cool story, how he met Shane and how they were sort of opposites when it came to what they like to do in Vegas, but how that would complement each other. Very cool story. And then Julian tells a cool story about how he took a loss, took a big loss at the casino, and how that became how that played a major role in him discovering this community, like the podcasters and the group outings and stuff like that, and how he got involved with this community. So that's a cool story as well. So Julian Romero from the Vegas Confessions podcast. Enjoy.
I'm using an XLR mic. He's like, you have more control over the voice and the settings. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to look into that. So little by little, been kind of, you know, upgrading, getting it down. And I'm sure when you started off, you kind of had a drawer full of accessories.
Dude, when I was recording my first podcast back in, I think, late 2011, early 2012.
Wow.
Back when people didn't know, and it doesn't even seem like that long ago, but like most people didn't know what a podcast was.
Nope.
And I remember having, do you remember on the PCs, there was like the 3.5 millimeter jack for the mic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had a $10 mic. Stick mic that I bought from Best Buy that plugged into that. It wasn't even a USB. It was just that. And it was marginally better than not having a mic at all.
Right.
Me and my friend that were doing it, we didn't edit. We just hit record. It was like, there was only like one program out called, it was called G Recorder, I think. And it connected either to Google Hangouts or I think it was Google Hangouts or Skype or something. And we didn't even edit. Like, it was just like, I think I may have chopped off the front and the back, right? But right. I didn't, there was no like editing in the middle. And that is what, my dog is back and he's very excited to be here. And that's where podcasting started for me. And now to feel like here I am and I have like 3 or 4 shows that are all sort of in current production. I have the same microphone that I've had for years. It's the ATR 2100 or the Audio Technica ATR 2100. It's what I've used for my personal podcasting for 3 or 4 years now, and it holds up. At work, I have a slightly better microphone for the podcast I do there. But I was telling someone the other day, like, It seems so rare to me to meet someone that doesn't have a podcast and also isn't thinking about starting one. That seems so rare anymore.
Well, on the other end of that, it's like you said, people who are still clueless to podcasts today, you know, like when you say, oh yeah, I do a podcast. What's a podcast? Like, oh shit, we got to have this conversation now, let alone, I know if we're going to have this conversation, you're probably not going to want to hear about Vegas. So it's just that realm where some people, they never come across it. Myself, I've been listening to podcasts, I want to say since 2010, 2009, maybe even 2008. Yep. I started listening to Bill Burr's, and it was something to listen to for an hour and a half, and it kept me interested. So then I just ventured off to other stuff. And yeah, it's funny, if you want to get into how I got into the gambling podcast, that was a whole nother adventure.
Yeah, we'll get there after we find out about how you got into gambling. Because that's what the Better Life is about, baby. We're about the better life, the being a gambler, being a better. Tell us about not necessarily the first wager you made personally, but your first exposure to gambling when you first saw it for the first time.
Well, myself, I got to admit, I wasn't into gambling. I mean, I'd heard my grandma, of course, mention a couple times, oh, I'm going to bingo. And that was obviously a big thing for them back then. But I'd never really been a gambler until I met my wife about 2-3 years in. One day we went to a casino and I thought, oh, wow, this is interesting. You know, a lot of people here hanging out, but they're just focused on these slot machines. And so when I went with her, I was opened up to video poker. Now, not just regular video poker. I was opened up to it's three lines and it was 525 a hand. And so playing with her, I'd watch her play. And she had been gambling for so long before me that it was just her thing. So I'm watching her play and she's hitting these jackpots. And I'm like, well, shit, I want to do that. You know, that looks fun. I wanted a little extra money. And so after sitting down, telling her, hey, I'm interested. I want to try it. Well, for maybe 15 minutes, we sat down and I'm playing these. I put in $200, which is insane to me at the time. Like, why would I throw my money in this machine if I know I can lose it? But I didn't see her lose. I kept seeing her win. So I'm like, okay, I want to try this. So put my $200 in. I ended up getting a four of a kind times three, I believe. And so at the time, it was just about $2,000. And so myself, I was already looking for a car. I was like, this is really going to benefit. I was like, this is really going to help me out. So after seeing her playing and not realizing how horrible of an exposure it was for me to introduction to gambling, because, you know, video poker, I mean, you can lose a lot of money, but I guess in any game you can too. But, you know, I eventually went from really liking video poker playing with her. And then I think it was about an hour later, I hit another jackpot with her. So this one, we were like, all right, we're splitting because we're playing together. So by the end of that night, I had won $3,000 with no intentions on gambling. So I now had money to buy myself a newer car, something a little less beat up, and get back and forth to work with. So I was excited and ecstatic. And of course, you've all heard of that first win. Everybody's chasing that first win. So of course, from then on, it was like, hey, when are we going back to the casino? Because, you know, I want to do that again. But it never seemed to work out that way after that point. But yeah, I mean, you have your highs, you have your lows. And for me, it was, like I said, kind of one of the worst ways to be introduced to gambling. I mean, not a knock on my wife, but for the part of it being video poker, and, you know, you're playing $100 can go really fast. And so yes, after a while, I ventured off towards blackjack and started, you know, looking at blackjack and the game and learning strategy and, you know, how to play the right way after losing for so long. So eventually, but that was my big introduction to gambling, was going down to a casino with my wife and thought, hey, let's go have a good dinner. Ended up walking out $3,000 richer.
Yeah, that's I was just talking to someone earlier today about you know, early exposure to gambling. Someone that gets early ruin, mm-hmm. kind of learn, like, picks up on the nuances of playing better more quickly, where if you have one of those earlier wins, I think the learning curve is a little steeper than to finally get to a point where you realize, oh man, that's not how that's not the norm. Walking in, it's always funny when I play with craps players for the first time and like the first like half hour goes well. They're like, this is so easy. Why isn't everybody doing this, right? How is there even a casino here? This is so easy.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story on that one is when we first played craps, me and the wife, we were on a cruise ship. And we had never, ever, I mean, we'd seen this game before at Laughlin in Vegas. We'd seen the tables, but we just never took interest to it. So when we played on this cruise ship, for the first time of being on a cruise ship, we're like, wow, they have a little casino. Let's go check it out, of course. So every night we ended up staying in the damn casino. But we got introduced to craps by these Indian guys, and they were just trying to teach us the game. Well, this lady, again, another horrible exposure. This lady started off with like a 45-minute roll. And me and my wife, we were only playing $5 at the time. But we bought in for $100 and cashed out with like $1,400-$1,500 a piece on just this lady rolling and the different dealers that were from like Yugoslavia and Russia. They're like, hey, brother, you got to press your bets on this. I'm like, hey, well, whatever you think I should do, let's do it. I'm not even realizing what's going on, dude. And by the time I was done, I had $1,500. My wife had just about $2,000-$3,000. And we're sitting there looking at each other like, what have we been missing out on this for this whole time? So, of course, again, it's one of those you win, win, win. But if that's what keeps happening, you're in it for a long run. If, you know, if you find out what's out on the other end, you're not going to always win, win, win.
Yeah. And so you find, I imagine that when you go to the casino, that the craps table is your priority.
Well, for me, Tim, I do have to admit, we're in California, so there's a couple of spots out here that have the card craps. Unless you're going to find bubble craps out here on a machine out here, you're not going to really get real dice crap. So that being said, I kind of save my adventures for when we're in Vegas or venture out to Atlantic City or wherever we may be that has real craps tables, because in California, we still have that shitty rule with no craps out here.
Yeah, I've never played that version of craps yet. I will at some point just to sort of see what it's about, but I imagine that'll last about 30 minutes, and then I will have decided that that I've done that and that's it. So when you're in Vegas, though, I imagine what's the average amount of time between you getting to your hotel and your first buy-in at the craps table?
let's say it's a 6-hour drive, and the first hour that we're there, we're on a craps table. Cause typically what happens is we leave early enough to where it's just about check-in time. So they have probably 20, 30 minutes before we could check in. And again, we always head to the craps table. Any dead time, extra time, if we're not at a craps table, we're checking out sports bets to see what lines we can get on right away. But I mean, there's always a craps table open, is our philosophy.
Yeah, you're speaking right up my alley. That's when I had my bachelor party in Vegas last June, and when we weren't like eating or seeing a show, I was playing craps or sitting in the sports book. Now, if I remember right, I think on the last Vegas Confessions that I listened to, that you are also, when by yourself, a don't player. Is that right?
Proud to admit, brother. I know this would make us better friends. I was just telling my wife right now, I was like, oh, babe, I'm going to have an interview with Tim from The Better Life, and he's a don't player. She looks at me and rolls her eyes. I'm like, whatever, I'm out of here. Yeah. Yeah.
So by the time people have heard this interview, they would have heard my monologue about this. But I realize what keeps me on the don't, especially when I'm by myself. I like having a limited liability per betting result, right?
Right.
So I like, the thing that appeals to me about the don't is each bet can only lose, I can only lose one bet on one roll, right? Versus the, versus on the pass, you know, you do a 3-point molly and you get slaughtered all day by posting 3 points and then sevening out and posting 3 points, you know.
Right.
And I know that the house edge is the difference between both philosophies are slim, but just for my own enjoyment, I prefer. Which is why if there's a blackjack table that I prefer and a craps table that I prefer, if they're the same price per bet, I'll actually choose the blackjack table for that reason, that for the lower liability per betting result. And it's it's not as fun, as you know, like when you win a don't bet, you just sort of stoically grab right. your chips and move on with life. But I don't know if you try this, like occasionally I'll get to the table, I'm like, you know what, I want to have fun tonight, like I want to like enjoy this experience, and I'll do the pass line and like when I'll do it like twice and then they'll both seven out, I'll be like, nope, sorry, that's too much, I can't handle this, and I'll go right back over to the dome.
You know, it's funny that you're mentioning that, because there was a guy when our last trip, we were just in Vegas, and there we went to check out the Stratosphere, and of course me and my wife, we went to check out the top of the Stratosphere. But we were planning to meet up with some folks for dinner. about an hour later. So we run down. We're like, hey, let's go check out the casino floor. Of course, we want to check out the craps tables. That's always our excuse. We got 20 minutes to spare. So we head down there and there's this guy playing the don't. She went to a slot machine and I went to go play the craps table. Well, when we're together, it's kind of hard, I'm sure you know, to play with the, well, with me trying to play with my wife craps if I want to play the don't and she's playing, she usually plays a pass line. So I end up playing with her. But that being said, I don't mind losing so much knowing, you know, the players won on the other end when I'm playing the don't as essentially me losing to the casino all night. So I think that's my comfort. I'd rather I'd be on the house's side, have that little edge to know that maybe I'd make something in the end rather than just go in on the pass line losing the whole time, because there's been moments where I've been aggravated, like you said, your last podcast, where things just don't go your way the whole night. And oh man, those nights are just bad.
I like shooting from the don't. And I like, you know, I'm very objective about craps, right? I know that I pick up the dice, I throw them, the dice just fall how they will. I will pass the dice if I hit the first point, simply because I don't like the, like, people respond oddly. Like when you're on, when you're shooting for the don'ts, yeah, and you hit the point, they're like, oh, what are you doing betting against yourself? And it's like, yeah, but I cleaned up on the rest of you guys. Like, well,
in that sense, going back to the guy's stratosphere, he was playing the don't with me and he's telling his buddy, hey, this is the way I play because this is the best way to play. And me and him were both playing the don't. And so he tells his buddy, oh yeah, that guy's playing like me too. We're the smart ones. Three freaking sevens in a row on the come out. We kept losing our money and he's looking back at his friend, still trying to persuade him that he's doing the right thing. And, you know, you think what you're doing is right and you want to feel better about it at the end of the night. So you stick with it. You know, that's always been my thing.
Yeah. So one time I tried playing around with, cause sometimes it gets kind of boring, making a don't pass bet, and then I always usually do at least one don't come, and establish one more point. But sometimes it gets kind of, but like when you get a player that goes on a long roll without ever actually hitting their point or hitting a seven, you're like, come on, because as a don't bettor, there's only one number that you really care about, right? And
right.
So to try to spice things up, I was like, you know what? So I would make a don't pass bet, and then I would make a come bet, and then I would establish a point on the come, which I know if for some people, like, why would you have? Well, it would give me a number to root for, you know, like it gave,
right?
So like I would have this don't pass bet that would win if he spoiled, but then I would have, like, you know, I have the nine on the don't pass, but then I'd have a come bet that gets put on the six. Well, now I'm looking for a six, right? And I can now,
and that's where I'm totally different. I won't shoot. If I'm playing the don't, go ahead, just pass those damn dice. I'm totally opposite of you. Yeah.
Yeah. So what, when you guys were in Vegas, what properties do you enjoy playing at? So just looking at it from a playing standpoint, gambling specific.
So it's funny because a lot of people ask, hey, you guys really stay at the Flamingo a lot? And we do. Me and my wife stay there a lot, but we rarely play there. When we do play big in Laughlin, but when we do play, so that's how we have a lot of the CET rewards. But we like to go downtown. We seem like we never have luck on the strip. And if we're not playing downtown, we always hang out at Ellis Island because we know the owners. We've always had fun there, always had a good time. So, and a lot of the people that we take down there seem to genuinely like it and like to hang out there. So it seems that we either gravitate towards Ellis Island. If not, we're always at either the downtown plaza, the Grand, Golden Gate. We spent a lot of time at the D this trip. So we were all over the place. But yeah, 9 times out of 10, we end up downtown or Ellis Island.
Yeah, I was talking to Christian Pina, who's a sports bettor, and we were talking about how all of, like, the strip making it just less and less enjoyable for gamblers especially, but for even just for people that just like are visiting, especially locals, with like the fees and the parking fees and the resort fees and everything that's like the nickel and diming Fremont Streets. I think the next couple of years is really going to get popping and it's going to be a lot really popular for gamblers especially. What other, so if you're not, do you still find yourself gravitating to a blackjack table? Do you play any poker? What sports do you like? What else are you doing gaming wise when you're not at the craps table?
I usually find something to keep myself busy. Just about anything I can put my money into, I can pretty much play it. For the most part, we do play a lot of slots. I like the Willy Wonka and the Simpsons newer slot machines. I do like those. My wife's real big on the Wheel of Fortune. I also like to play, or we also like to do a lot of sports betting. We're big on football, big on baseball. The wife's real big on basketball. So, and I know you're big on the NCAA tournament this year. So I know that bracket's been kind of all over the place right now.
Yeah, my brat. I mean, by the time people hear this, we will have known who won the tournament. But my bracket going into the Sweet 16, my bracket's already a mess. But the one saving grace I have is I do have. I still have three of my final four still intact. So
nice.
As far as my office pool goes, I think I'm still competitive, but I do like NCAA. I've been doing a lot of NBA betting.
Oh, nice.
Because of Tankapalooza. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. There are seven teams in the NBA that are tanking, on purpose and, with good reason.
Their picks.
And yeah, nice. Exactly. And this is the last year that the lowest team will get a 25% chance in the draft lottery. That changes next year, so that way to try to deter tanking. But it's still a thing here. So there are seven teams that are tanking, and so I mean we're just tying whenever those teams are on the road against competitive teams. I mean we're just parlaying those money lines, and it's just crushing.
Nice.
It's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. Where do you like to be in Vegas when you're not gaming? Do you have a restaurant? Do you have a property you like to hang around? Do you have a pool that you like to visit?
I really, really, really enjoy the downtown scene. It's just a totally different animal from the strip, and the vibe's just totally different for us. So that being said, you get a little more of the reality, the everyday people, you know, not so much your uppities and tourists. I mean, they're going to be out there, but not so much. So that being said, you get to move around a little more, check out what's actually there, what's open, what's, you know, what's been taken down, and you get to spend time freely. As I just feel you're kind of crammed along the strip, if you know what I mean. There's just so much going on. So yeah. Many people, you're kind of directed a certain way, as opposed to Fremont, you can just kind of, you know, turn around, go right back to where you came from, do it what it is you please. And you know, there's so many good restaurants and options out there. And I know you're going to experience your first group trip, but you know, when we go with the group, I mean, you really can't go wrong with whatever you guys decide to go, whether it's Downtown Plaza or Pizza Rock or, you know, Carson's Kitchen. We've went to some of these places I never knew existed and had some of the best meals we've ever had in Vegas. So, I mean, I've been surprised by a lot of these people's choices. And that's one of the other uplifting things about these kind of group trips is you get other people's perspectives and ideas. So that being said, sometimes you're like, oh, let's just do whatever. And they're like, oh no, you can't do whatever. We got to go to the Atomic Bar. You got to check this place out. Like, it's one of the best dive bars in Vegas, or just stuff like that you never knew. I mean, Shane took me to the Mob Museum a couple trips ago, and just, I mean, I was in for something I never thought I was going to see. I mean, I'd heard of it. And then when we went down there, even he was wowed because it was totally different than what it had looked like a couple previous years when he had been there. So he was just like, wow, this is worth, you know, the money I spent to get in here. It was like, cool, man, I'm glad you enjoyed it, because I really did. Yeah. So there's just so much going on. I can sit down and watch people all day long. You know, that's my favorite thing to do in Vegas. And you know, I was sitting down earlier thinking, I love people watching so much. I even like people watching when they're gambling, if that makes sense, whether it's blackjack or craps.
Absolutely.
I mean, just to watch people from their highs to their lows. I mean, it's really cool to see.
That is one of that sentiment right there is one of the things that keeps me wanting to just be around. Like there's times where I go to MGM and I just don't feel, I don't want to gamble all the time, right? Like I don't have the bankroll to be doing that, but I just right. I like hanging around, like I'll hang around our craps table, and you know, craps tables are really easy to hang around, right? You know, that you don't and I'll just sort of right. watch just like people's expressions. My favorite thing, of course, at a craps table is like the routine that some people go through to throw their dice. at a blackjack table. I'm always fascinated by like the things people, the traditions that people have, the routines that they have when it comes to making their bets, calling for an ace, calling for a face card, calling for a monkey, stuff like that. It's just so fascinating how different things are. Who was I talking to the other day? I was talking to my wife about this. In Baccarat, right, you have players that are tracking play, right? And in Baccarat, and I think I heard this actually from what's his name, that I can't remember what show he was on, but he was the founder of Travelzork, Baccarat. He's like Baccarat guy or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was him who was talking about this. Don't quote me, but in case it was, there's me giving him credit. But where Baccarat players will track progress, and if there's a trend, they'll ride it, right? If banker's a trend, they'll ride the banker. But if you go to the roulette table, 5 feet away, you have players that when they see 10 reds in a row, want to go black. Because blacks do, right? And the complete opposite feelings on the same type of pattern. It's just so fascinating that roulette players would think that the other sides do, but Baccarat players, when there's a trend, want to ride it. And so, you know, things like that, and I'm going on a tangent on this, but just adding to, you know, what you mentioned about just in watching people play and watching how they respond to things.
There's two instances that stand out for me is, one, I was in AC with this, our last trip, we went to AC for Zorkfest and we saw two guys in Caesars and I shit you not, these guys, dude, were playing, they both cashed in for $750,000 a piece. They were betting literally houses and cars on the field. I mean, these guys were betting 350 at a time, just playing dice just to play. And they were throwing money back and forth. They both went down to like 100,000, 150,000 a piece, and then jumped right all the way back up to 900,000 and cashed out. And they just played for 45 minutes. And that was their enjoyment. That was their bankroll. That was the fun that they were looking into. That was the high they were getting from throwing dice. Like, and just to sit there and watch them and see that, tip the waitress $100 every time she brought them a drink. I mean, I love people watching, dude. People are just so different in all different parts of the world. And that's what I love about Vegas is you get to hang out with everybody from all over. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Now you mentioned Shane recently. Tell me, so you co-host the Vegas Confessions podcast. It's you, Shane, and Eric Rosenthal. Tell me about how you met Shane and how you guys started the Vegas Confessions podcast.
So it's funny, we were at Vegas Vacation 5, which is a group meetup by the 360 Vegas podcast that's held in September. So there's two meetups a year with them. And so we had went to the second one. I went to the first one in May with my wife. And the second trip, my wife wasn't going to be able to make it. So I decided, you know, I still want to go. I want to go hang out with these people. I had made some really good friends. So I'm going to go hang out. Well, one day I'm sitting there, the first day of the event, we're hanging out at the first bar at the Mirage, and Shane walks up, introducing himself to everybody. I'm sitting by myself, and I had known a couple people and said hi to everybody I knew, and I'm just sitting there, and Shane walks over. He's like, "Hey, how are you? I'm Shane." I'm like, "Hey, dude, how you doing? I'm Julian." And so as it went on throughout the trip, I noticed he was by himself. So I asked him, "Hey, dude, did you come out here by yourself?" And a long story short, basically came down to he was a history nut of Vegas and loves Vegas for every freaking aspect opposite of me. And I was like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't gamble. He does drink a whole lot more than I do because I barely drink. And, you know, this guy just can tell you what was what before it was burnt down and built up to this. And I just thought that was fascinating. And then to hang out with this dude for like 4 straight days in Vegas and just have him take me to all these different places I had never seen because I'd always spent my time in a casino gambling at the craps table. So he's like, "Dude, there's freaking roller coasters in these casinos, dude. You got to come and check out." I'm like, "Really? Let's go ride some." And he's like, "You've never been to the Mob Museum?" I'm like, "Let's go now." He's like, "So what do you want to do next?" I'm like, "Dude, I'm an open book." And then so we just kind of did everything. And then we had some other people hang out with us, and we took them along, whether we were checking out the MGM park or whatever it was that we were doing. we never stopped. And so after hanging out those few days, we're kind of like, he brought up the idea. He was like, you know, man, I really had a good time. Like, me too. And I said, you know what? I had never had this much fun. I mean, one night we stood out and just checked out dive bars all night and went to all of these little hole in the walls. And we stood at one place that was called Dino's. We stood there for like 3 hours from maybe 2 to 5 o'clock in the morning. And to see these people have to buzz at a door to get inside. And me and Shane and our buddy Dale are just looking at each other laughing because, you know, the place is literally locked down and you have these strippers coming in to get some beers after their shifts. And you're just looking like, this shit is every day out here, you know? And so with Shane, he was just like, dude, I have a fascination for Vegas. I like coming to Vegas and seeing the new turnover and everything that's changing. I said, you know, I like coming to meet people and hang out with people like you and just have a good time, man. I said, why don't we do a podcast on Vegas? And I know there's plenty of them, but let's do something, you know, we would like to talk about something we would like to hear and maybe a different angle than what everybody else is doing. And so that being said, you know, I told him I have a lot of good stories and, you know, a lot of great trips and experiences that I think would be good for a podcast. And then with your side, as far as the history and all that, I think we have some good potential, man. And he's like, you know what? That's a really good idea. Let's do this. And so, you know, it took us like a month to figure out what name we wanted to use. And then another month to figure out our image. And we just started getting things down in place and made it happen basically. So, you know, but besides meeting all the different podcasters and the people that listen, I mean, I can't say enough, you know, from meeting Dr. Mike and Mark and hanging out with freaking Vito and cousin Mikey and getting to meet, you know, Eric Rosenthal, just a guy, you know, we brought him on because he was just another one who was totally opposite of us. He knew the insides of the casino gaming. He has that whole different outlook than we have. So we're like, you know what? And on top of that, he's an East Coast guy. So he experiences Atlantic City and that side of the casinos more than we would. So, I mean, that would be great to add on our side of everything, you know, just the gaming and gambling knowledge that he has would be great. And just, you know, he's a great friend, a great, great, great conversation all the time. So we were like, you know, our Super Bowl trip, we're like, you know what, let's make this a threesome. So, and you know, from then on, when we asked him to basically see him, like, yes, hell yeah, I'd love to come on and talk and chat with you guys. So, you know, that's basically, you know, our free hour a week. We come down and just have a good time, forget about everything else that's going on and just talk Vegas or gambling related or, you know, listening to our podcast that I get to listen to every day while I'm cooking in my kitchen at work. You know, it's a lot of fun. And again, I can't condone you more on coming into this community and picking this subject of all the criterias out there because, you know, this is a really, really good community, an even better family, and the people that you meet, man, the friends you make. I mean, I can't say enough, dude. These people are awesome. I mean, you have the Gibsons in Texas. You have the Moores in Texas. I mean, you have people in Florida, the Ohio's. You have everybody and the people in Canada, the people who come down from London to just hang out with you guys for a few days. I mean, it surprises me the love that you get from these people, the listeners who Han from Chicago who came to hang out for, you know, a day and a half in Vegas with us, or, you know, one guy who flew out with his wife, Joey Gibson from Texas, just to hang out for literally 30 hours and turn around and fly back because they had I think it was a baptism that they were going to baptize a baby the next day and they just came out, you know. But it's the camaraderie you make, the friendships you make, and the, you know, the connections you make with these people who all can help you in different angles. And, you know, whether it be podcasting or fixing your audio or trying to fix an image or getting a website going together. I mean, like I said in our last episode, the Travelzork team reached out to us and they knew we were having some issues with our website and getting the domain set the way we wanted it. And they're like, hey, let us help you. You know, let us help you. You guys have been nothing but a great friend in the community. Let us reach out to you and let us do something for you. So that being said, you know, we're going to do all we can on our end to promote ZorkFest and make sure it's one of the best events that people can make it to, because ZorkFest 1 was a blast. That was a blast.
Yeah. I, you know, we mentioned, you mentioned the community a lot on Vegas Confessions. I've mentioned that on here that it's a big reason why I stepped into this, but I can't reiterate that sentiment enough because, you know, the first set of betting themed podcasts that I listened to were sports betting podcasts. And if anybody's familiar with the sports betting world, there aren't a lot of, there's a good chunk of it are not good characters. And either because out of competition, some of them are very smug, right. Some of them are touts, and they're just using marketing to make money off of potential clients. I was fortunate enough to find a couple that I really liked and actually get to know those individuals and become good friends with them and see the more authentic and transparent side of sports bettors and actually learn from people. And that's where I've continued to grow as a sports bettor. But I started listening to this side of things and the recreational gambler stuff and the Vegas, theme stuff. And man, I can't say, like, I've already had like three or four people in the community that I haven't engaged with at all. Just DM me saying, "Hey, I listened to your show. I dig it. Let me know if you want to collaborate or if you need a guest or something like that." I'm like, thanks. Like,
That's one thing about this community is it's not a competition. And I realized that when we first got in, it's not a competition. It's a community, and it's what it should be. You should be embracing people to essentially come into their favorite place in the world to meet their favorite people in the world and have, a great time playing their favorite games or spending the time in one of their favorite casinos in the world that they, genuinely are at. So, I mean, that being said, to be able to do that and witness that with people or even the people who come out to Vegas for the first time and being able to show them something that you were shown, essentially, you know what I mean? That's pretty cool to see them light up for the first time too and share that experience. It's really cool, man.
Yeah. 100% agree. Julian, do you have a gambling or casino or Vegas themed movie or TV series that you consider your favorite or one you really enjoy?
You know, when I first started listening to your show, I was thinking to myself, which one would be my number one? Because I loved the movie 21. Even though I know there's some flaws in it, I love that movie. Just the whole aspect where, you have the highs and the low of a gambler and some of the things, they go through. But there's also one that sticks out to me. I think it's Owning Mahoney.
Yes.
YouTube, that's a really good one. I mean, that guy literally had his freaking table full of the casino's chips. And then, he goes to the craps table and it was all gone. I mean, there's just so many that I really like. It's just really, I've watched hours and hours of documentaries on cheating the casinos and YouTube. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. I'm a nut, dude. I'm a nut. Yeah.
Tony Mahoney is I had to ingest it in two sittings. I couldn't do the full, like, it was so painful to watch at some points that I actually had to stop it and then finish watching it the next day. But that's actually a true story. So that's one thing that I find interesting about that. Owning Mahoney is, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's great in it. So, right. Something that I know, I'm sure you've heard me play the Bet Your Life on It game with some people. We have a new question.
Okay.
I just started asking people this today. One side is already 2-0, right? So we already have two on one side. Julian, I know you're familiar with it. For anybody who's not, I'm going to give Julian an option. He's going to make a bet. He's going to bet his life on one or the other. If he were to win his bet, he would be granted an entire second lifetime. But should he lose his bet, his life would be taken from him immediately. Now, of course, this is hypothetical. I only put it in this phrasing to sort of give it the if you had to risk it all in this situation, which side would you really be on?
Okay.
In their prime, Muhammad Ali versus Mike Tyson.
Oh,
in their prime.
Wow.
Which side are you putting your wager on?
Oh man. Oh, that's a good one right there. Wow. And I was so prepared for the Browns and third president question. Jesus. Okay. No, that's awesome. This is a really great question. Muhammad Ali, man, I mean, the guy did so much and he was just phenomenal. But then, Mike Tyson, I mean, he was a beast, dude, like a whole nother animal. I mean, oh, wow. I I have to give it up to one of the greatest. I'm going to have to, I hope I don't mess it up and I'm the one on the other side, but I did get to see some of Tyson's fights. And you know, that's one thing that always stands out is the way he would fight is just a beast. But Muhammad Ali, man, there's something to be said about him. I'm going to have to go with the greatest. I have to say Muhammad Ali. That's really hard. That's a great question, Tim. That's a great question.
Thank you. Thank you. I came to that one literally minutes before hitting record with the first person I was asking that interviewing that I was going to ask that question. So, and when I thought of it, I was like, oh, that's perfect. No, the trend. I know you were ready for the Browns and president question. I decided to, as soon as one side gets to five votes, that's when I'll move on to another one. Browns and third party president went 5-0 for the Browns, and it looks like they're trying to prove you guys right by they're making some moves in the offseason. And then today you are number three, sir.
Good. I'm glad I didn't mess anything up. Yeah, okay, good. Three. I want to be the one standing out there.
Yeah, you're gonna be one over there. Like, well, I guess I'm by myself. We're 3-0 now with Muhammad Ali.
How about you? What would yours be if you had to pick?
Ali. For the same reason why if you gave me Mayweather and Tyson, then I would choose Mayweather. But I think there's something in defensive boxing from someone who can also knock you out, right? And so Tyson was probably the greatest knockout fighter we'll ever see in the sport. But you know, if he can't connect, he can't put you down. And so not to say that Tyson wouldn't be able to connect punches, but you know, I think Ali's gonna be able to wear him out enough to take him in a later round. Thank you. I appreciate your complimenting that
was
question.
Awesome. Yeah, that was a great question. I was like, whoa, I didn't expect that, but that was a good one. Very good.
You talked earlier about, you know, your early gambling and having some big wins. Tell me if you're comfortable, do you have a story about a big loss that you had to take? And you don't have to give me your biggest loss. You can choose a mediocre loss that you'll stamp as a big loss, whatever you want. But I think as gamblers, we all appreciate these stories because I think they're ones that we all have.
Oh, yeah.
So with whatever you're comfortable with sharing, do you have a story that might fit that?
I do. I actually was sitting down talking to my wife and I was telling her, you know, I'm going to talk to him about this. But, about 3 years ago, I was thought I was smart enough to go play big at the blackjack, you know? So I thought, you know, I got this down. I got the strategy down. Let me go ahead and, put some money down. Well, long story short, my worst night in the loss up to then was about $1,000. And that was just a dagger. I just kept thinking to myself that night, like, I literally wasted just about 2 weeks of pay. Like, I worked 2 weeks for free, basically, because of my dumbass doing. So it started off with, I had put some money into a video poker machine. I'd won a couple $100. Therefore, I had about $1,000 on me. So I had went to a slot machine, lost a couple hundred, went over to the blackjack table, was like, it's all right, I got this counting down, I'm going to do it, I got this part down, I can get a little edge, get some of that money back. Ended up losing all of it. I ended up coming home mad, of course, and you know, I'm talking to my wife about it, and she's lost a lot more than that. She's laughing at me. She's like, $1,000? Like, that's nothing. Like, wait till you lose $3,000 or $4,000. I'm like, no, I don't want to even know what that's like. She's like, but you know, that's the gambling. I was like, then that's when I kind of realized, you know, maybe this is not for me. If I'm not going to have fun putting my money into something I think is supposed to be entertaining, I'm not having fun because I'm losing. I started getting the mindset, Tim, when I'd go to the casino, I'm going to lose this money. And then when I got to that point, I was like, all right, this is where I got to look at what I'm doing. So then I thought about, well, there's not very many people you can talk to about this kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm just going to quit this gambling. I'm not going to look into it. I'm just going to stop in general. Well, it was either looking at Gambling Anonymous and, you know, trying to go and quit in total, but You know, after realizing that's probably a bunch of people with bad and sad stories, it's not what I want to be a part of because I'm genuinely a happy person. I was like, you know what? Let me see if I can find something on YouTube, maybe gambling addictions and whatnot. Nope, not it. I said, you know what? I've already been listening to podcasts since 2010. Why not look at what's in there? Gambling. Boom. Threw in gambling. You can bet on that. Came up. Cousin Vito. You know, all the other podcasts started popping up. I'm like, oh, okay. Let me give these guys a listen. Long story short, about a year later, they were saying they were having a meetup in May of 2017. And, you know, they were basically inviting people out. And it happens to be May's my birthday. So I was like, well, babe, if there's something I want to do for my birthday, I want to go to Vegas to meet up with these guys I've been listening to. All they talk about is craps. Then when we had played craps for the first time on the cruise ship, we drove home and our whole drive home, I played You Can Bet on That for her because she can see what it was about. So she thought it was really neat. Well, I had played on the way to Vegas that day, the week of my birthday. I had played Cousin Vito, You Can Bet on That, another couple other podcasts that she can listen to. So she had kind of an idea what she was getting into. So by the time we got to Vegas, she knew what these podcasts were kind of about that I was listening to. And when I got there to meet these people, it was like, oh man, these people literally understand what I'm talking about. Some of these people gamble a lot more and have lost a lot more than $1,000. That's no fucking big deal. So after meeting these people in the community, I'm glad I went to look up a Vegas or gambling related podcast on iTunes, because then it just opened up a whole nother world to where I was like, all right, these people you can talk to about gambling, blackjack, craps, roulette, poker, betting, sports. I mean, you name it. They all know the lingo. They all know what it's like to lose by that one point, you know, or not cover the spread because one team, you know, wants to shoot free throws at the end of that last minute or whatever it may be. But when you're having those talks with people who kind of get where you're coming from, makes it a little more interesting. You're not so pissed off, and getting through those hard times is not so bad, if you know what I mean. So that's where it kind of went hand in hand for this. And it opened me up to the gambling podcast. And when I started listening to Mike and Mark, and they were actually at a time where they weren't doing too great either. And they were talking about the lows in gambling and how it's not always going to be an upper, and, you know, sometimes you're going to lose. And so after hearing these podcasts and that kind of happening and going into play, I'm like, okay, it's not just me. I'm not doing everything wrong. I'm not actually messing it up for myself. This happens. So after a while, boom, I started just, hey, you know what? I'm more into the meetups. I'm more in hanging out with people. And yes, we can gamble while we're there, but I want to go for the socializing part, meeting new people from Maryland or wherever they may be, New York, Philadelphia, New Hampshire. I want to meet these people and, you know, make an impression on them so they remember these events and what it was like when they came out to Vegas. So yeah, man, losing that $1,000 was probably one of the best, worst things that has ever happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only a couple times in my life where I've taken an L of that proportion, and I'll say those stories for another date. My wife listens to this podcast. I want to ease her into that, right? So, she's not a better herself. So,
okay.
Yeah, which is actually perfect because it keeps me in check every time I enter the arena of gambling, right? I know that it is not that not everybody in the family is comfortable with it, and that it's not just my money, and so it helps me tremendously. Julian, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I will reach out to Shane to have him on eventually. I know he doesn't really gamble much, though, right? He doesn't.
Right, he doesn't gamble much, but he's very into the history part of stuff. And every time, yeah, he goes to Vegas, he's talking about how he's looking for a slot machine he can buy, he can take home. And the guy, he's intrigued, but we just haven't got him to sit there at a craps table with us and get him into it. So that might be our goal the next time we all meet up.
Yeah, maybe. And then after Gamble Palooza is when I'm probably going to have Mr. Rosenthal on, so we can recap the events and nice. and then talk a little more about gambling. Yeah,
you're going to have a lot of fun with him. He's a good time, man. Eric's a great time. He knows a lot of great people, and I'm excited for you for your first group meetup at Gamble Palooza. Shout out to all you guys out there. I know you guys are going to have a great time. And Tim, I'm excited for you to meet a lot of these folks, man. They're genuinely good people, brother. It's good.
Thank you. Thank you. Julian, do you want to, give yourself a plug here for anybody who's not familiar with the show or yourself?
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, man. You guys can check us out over at Vegas Confessions. I do the show with my buddy Shane and Eric. We're all about great Vegas stories, great casino and gambling related stories. We talk everything from Vegas to Atlantic City and everything else. We do all these group trips. I record and post everything up on YouTube at jromero559. Go check out our events, and hopefully we'll see you at one of our next meetups.
Word. Jay, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir, and I hope that sooner than later you and I can throw some dice together.
Oh, yeah, brother. I plan to be over on your side of the coast in June of this year, so hopefully we can get together at some point.
All right, big thanks to Julian for joining me. Always a pleasure talking to those guys. We'll have Eric Rosenthal on probably shortly after Gamblepalooza to sort of recap that and talk and to learn more from Eric about his gambling life. So the other reason that the podcast did not come out yesterday, right? The Blackjack Tournament postponed it to last night, but other developments delayed it till this morning. And I delayed till this morning so that way I could officially make an announcement. The Better Life will be sponsoring the Podcasters After Dark event at Zorkfest this May. Now, unfortunately, I will not be in attendance, but I wanted to support the event. I wanted to support that specific event, and I wanted to contribute to the event as much as I could. Connected with Eric Rosenthal, decided this was a good opportunity to do that. And so Podcasters After Dark, sponsored by The Better Life. I have two tickets to that event. And so if you are in Vegas over Memorial Day weekend and are not attending Zorkfest, but would like to go to the Podcasters After Dark event, I will be thinking of a way to get those tickets to someone soon, whether that's through Patreon or through my Twitter followers or however that may be, but stay tuned for more information on that. And then lastly, Gamblepalooza is next weekend, the weekend of April 20th. Gamblepalooza at Foxwoods. The event that everybody's sort of talking about is this high limit slot pull. I am still undecided if I'm going to buy a share of the slot pull, but I am offering, I know there's a lot of people who can't make it that are looking for a way to get some action in on a slot pull. Hit me up, gamble@lawsonentertainment.com, gamble@lawsonentertainment.com, LAWSON, lawsonentertainment.com. That is my parent company or LLC that I use for all my professional endeavors. Email me there and just let me know, hey, I can't make it to Gamblepalooza, but I want to get a share of the slot pull. I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to let everybody who emails me get some action in on it. But if you're interested, email me, and if we can work it out, I'll buy a share or two on behalf of people that want to get some action in on this slot pull. So there we go. Hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show. And then we also have some new t-shirts. TheBetterLife.us/merch. That's right. The website is up. It is barren because still building it, but it is up. TheBetterLife.us. If you go to /merch, you will see our online shop. Right now, there is a t-shirt in honor of the Charles Barkley infamous quote, "He's one of those idiots who believes in analytics." So we created a t-shirt where anybody who believes in analytics and sabermetrics when they handicap sports betting can proudly wear that and let Charles Barkley know that there's many of us out here. You can copy your t-shirt there. That'll do it. One more episode before Gamblepalooza. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.